Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 85 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing stunningly, amazingly well.
Get your hands off that microphone, what are you doing?
It's wobbly.
Yeah, it's alright, it didn't peek out. We're okay. We'll carry on. This is our first recording of the year, amazingly, isn't it?
Yeah.
We had a nice little break from each other.
Yeah, it's very good, yes. I've forgotten who you are.
Yeah, I've forgotten how to do this. This week we're talking about offence, aren't we? So there will be a disclaimer at the start in case anyone is offended. But we're going to talk about offence and humour in relation to all the stuff that's gone down in Paris and,
around the world, really.
Around the world. Yeah. We felt relevant to have a little chat about that. But first, as we always do, how have you been doing? You all right?
I'm doing really well. Had an amazing Christmas, amazing New Year, really getting into 2015.
Yeah, up to speed work-wise, busy.
I'm always busy. Lots going on.
Yeah.
Decided to trade the car in and get a new one. So by the time you see me next time, I might have a new car outside.
Another one of the same?
Yeah, probably. But this one, it's about to top the 100,000 mile mark.
Okay.
So I think it's probably time to move it on and get another one in.
Yeah.
But I've never been a particular kind of, hey, I'm into cars kind of person. I like something that's comfortable, has got a wheel at each corner, stops and starts, has got a good sound system, and is reliable.
I'm not going to see an Aston Martin on the driving style.
There'd be a Rolls Royce. Yeah, so that's always fun, the new car scene. But life's good.
Your leg all right as well? Your leg is getting out,
yeah? Yeah, I keep overtraining. I'll learn one day, and I've got a nice tear in my left Achilles tendon.
Ouch.
Which means I'm loaded full of painkillers and Voltarol gels and things like that. But it's okay, it repairs itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was told by the pain clinic that to stay off it for 4 to 6 weeks, no running, which means I can't do the half marathon that I would have been doing in 2 weeks' time.
That's a shame.
Which is a pain.
That's a shame, but you can't do it, eh?
You can't. No, but I'll get there. One day I should be kicking sand in people's faces. But I've been doing this, they call it the Dragon Challenge.
I've seen this on, I've seen you talk about it.
Yeah, well, every morning you have weights and you do 100 lifts.
Yeah.
It's for 100 days, so I'm on about day 27 now.
And what weight is this?
I'm using 5 kilograms either side at the moment.
All right, that's not too...
building up to 10, that's the idea.
100 with 10, that'd be quite something.
You're supposed to say to me at this point, wow, you're looking really hunky.
Oh, yeah, you look fantastic, John, for your age and all.
Yeah, cheeky sod.
Yeah, see?
I'm really offended.
Yeah, you should be. I try my best. Been plenty of that.
Yeah, lots of practice.
I've had a good start to the year as well. Jake broke his sleep records. 7 hours he went.
Wow.
From 8 till 3 in the morning.
I have to say that you look a bit tired.
Do I?
You look like you could go and do a nice few hours sleep.
Well, I did say, I think, in the last one, I wanted to show sleep more respect in the new year. And I have been.
Yeah.
I'm not working in the evenings at the moment, partly because I've got lots on, but it's been a gentle start to the year email-wise, so... But I'm enjoying not working in the evenings. I think that's helping. So I do feel more refreshed, actually.
Yeah.
Even though I don't look it, obviously. Yeah. I'm so offended. But yeah, and I'm also... I've got to mention, I was having a pop at which people that sit in and watch box set DVDs on Netflix.
And now they've got you.
They got me. I'm addicted. I'm into my crime drama all of a sudden.
Right.
I got for my birthday, which is just before Christmas, True Detective box set.
Yeah.
Which has got Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey as the two partner detectives in the Deep South on this pretty gruesome case. It's just amazing. Like, oh my. We watched it like 8 episodes in 3 or 4 nights.
Right.
Moved on to Broadchurch.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, all right, I've got to sign up to Netflix now because I need to see Fargo, I need Mad Men, I need...
Now, it's interesting to describe something here. Father Christmas bought me a box set of the Doc Martin series.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, from way back.
They are still current, but
he's still going.
Yeah. But Doc Martin is the doctor who moves into from sort of Londonish down to Cornwall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's really on the Asperger's spectrum and has a million problems.
I mean, I grew up like I used to watch like you know with my parents on a Sunday like Miss Marple and Ruth Rendell mysteries and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always liked them. I've just realised again that they are quite enjoyable. But I think I'm pretty hardcore with my crime. I like.
Yeah, you like a bit of blood and guts.
Sexual offenders, all that kind of stuff. It's got to be no holds barred.
You should be working in the probation service.
Flipping out, crazy. But yeah, so it's good fun, but we should dive in because we've been chin-wagging for too long. I just want to mention quickly two reviews we've had, which we love. iTunes reviews. We've had a great one, 5 stars, from Stefan Alex Lay, who's loving the show. Suffered from depression and anxiety a fair bit, it sounds. Discovered our show. They feel like he feels like he's robbing us because it's free. So you can buy a book, Stefan, off the website.
Yeah, yeah.
You really have to. But yeah, I love listening to the show. So yeah, thanks, Stefan.
Perhaps we should put bank details up so people can put contributions.
Yeah, maybe. And we've had another one, which is a 1-star review from Mullen61, saying rubbish. Don't bother with this one.
So are we offended?
No, I'm not offended by that. You've got to take the good with the bad when you hit the big time, haven't you? So,
I think that the deal is that if everybody thought you were wonderful all the time, it probably wouldn't be real. But
pretty close. But yeah, hey ho.
Yeah, yeah.
We will aim to please. And you know, to be fair, you know, if you don't like it, let us know why. Email us podcast@livingthepresent.co.uk,
and we'll cry.
And we'll do we listen to feedback on this show? Sometimes?
We do. We don't always agree with it. But yeah.
Yeah, but it's rolling on nicely into our topic, which is offence. If you haven't been watching the news, you may not be aware that another act of pretty severe terrorism has gone down in Paris, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Charlie Hebdo officers attacked, 12 people killed in the office, I think, and then a further 4 more in a bit of a standoff.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff.
And there was hostages in a Jewish supermarket, wasn't there?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole area, there was a big movement that said that the following day, that every newspaper throughout the world should have published the cartoons on their front page as a way of saying that society is not free speech is not going to be cowed by fear. And I think that the kind of things that we're talking about in this podcast are what's humour, what's it about, why are we offended, and why don't we do things? And I suppose I want to start with the concept of fear.
Well, yeah. I mean, you talk about newspapers doing it. You know, we're all publishers now because we're all online, with blogs and Twitters. So we could have all put our we still can put our profile pics as, you know. Well, actually, the first episode since the attack is out today, as this has been recorded, and it's got Prophet Muhammad on the front with a Je suis Charlie sign, and all is forgiven above it. You know, so they've gone on the attack. So we could all put that as our profile pic if we're all after this free speech. But at the same time, you know, I like humour, but I don't want to offend just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
So I think.
And well, that's what this is about, isn't it?
Yes.
I think that the first thing is that people don't do things in life, whether it's say things or do things with their lives generally, because of fear. Mm. People are limited by fear.
Yeah.
And what this kind of act feeds into is that part of people, so they close down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you either get the fear response, which is I withdraw, or you start to get the opposing response, which bothers me a bit at the moment. I'm watching the marches that are going on in Germany that I see as, and I'm owning this statement. I see
it's not me, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm seeing them as right wing, brackets. Fascist, you know, potentially neo-Nazi, which is that bit of society, not just Germany, it happens all over the places. You've got the Le Pens in France, you know, we had the BNP here. I'm not sure where they sit in society at the moment.
Yeah.
But that drive, once we start to have these problems and then we start to identify us and them, you know, you're no longer one of us, So the last big classic was the Holocaust. So that for whatever happened, the Nazi Germans decided that the Jews were the scapegoats and decided to eliminate 6 million Jews. So that
blimey.
But that whole idea of us and themness mm-hmm. is born out of fear, and then is born out of the things that come from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things that I see in what's going on is the potential for those kinds of cells. At the moment, it's Islam. In the past, it would have been Christian cells, you know, whatever. But those cells of fanatics that are amongst us can be popping up all over the place, like pop-up shops in shopping centres. You know, it's like you get a cell that's sleeping that pops up and does crazy things and either disappears or gets destroyed or...
Yep.
Or whatever, in the name of what? You know, we were talking earlier on, and at different times you've had the idea of Christians and Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
We've had different problems, certainly in the subcontinent between what became India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. You had the separation of Hindu and Muslim. You have the separation of Hindu and Sikh.
Mm-hmm.
Guru Nanak, who was the founder of Sikhism, and I'm not sure that the quote is 100% accurate because I can't remember it exactly, but in reading his words, he was effectively saying there is no Hindu, there is no Jew, there is no Christian, we are all one thing.
Yeah. Oh, man, I mean, it's separation all across the board, isn't it? I mean, even now we're all of a sudden we're all super-duper best pals, France, Britain. Yeah, you know, how much banter
was it? The Hundred Years' War. Was
oh
it, was
yeah,
it?
There's yeah. wars, but also you yeah. know just general kind of dislike of each other is kind of the going right. You know, they call us lay roast beef, we call them the frogs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's yeah. kind of light-hearted ish, I guess, because we go there on holiday and stuff. You know,
yeah, yeah. But it's the whole thing about we're often referred to as limeys,
yeah,
or poms. Aren't we? So mm-hmm. are we offended by that? I suppose that it's easy for us, as coming from a white Christian background in a country that did have an empire until fairly recently across the world and suppressed and badly treated lots of people around the world,
yeah.
to feel very differently. You know, it doesn't bother me if people call me honky or spook or stuff like that. I'm not offended by that. But if I was to use equivalent words towards black people, Asian people, coloured people, Chinese people, then it would be considered overtly racist.
You're not allowed to say coloured people. That's racist.
But it's really interesting that, because I've had that argument several times. Because I was born in Brixton, that was in London, which was predominantly a Western Caribbean. A lot of Jamaicans, but... a whole range from the islands, Barbados, all around. And I worked with teams of girls where I would be the only white person in the team. Maybe there's 30, 40 people. And I'd be the only white-skinned person there. And the girls described themselves as coloured.
Yeah.
And then there came a point back along with... The power movements, the black power movements, where it became inappropriate to call people coloured, and yet I still hear people that are of a black or a darker skin describing themselves as coloured.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm a bit kind of question mark on that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to bring this up towards the end, but what I want to try and bring the conversation on is how, because we're all going to be offended at some point. How is it? How do we equip ourselves to not take offence at things, because in this multicultural, fantastic world of ours, there's difference of opinion all the time, aren't there? So it's just about having a thick skin, or just letting it, like, water off a duck's back, etc. Or do you need to fight back every now and again?
Having lived around the world in different communities and having been the minority, it is odd being a minority, especially if you're a minority of one.
Yeah,
that makes it odd. But here, where we live, and if you're in another part of the world, you may not hear this clearly, But my accent is a Southern English accent, and England is rife. And I'm saying England particularly. I'm excluding Wales and Scotland from this statement because they've got their own issues. But England particularly is rife with accents. You can drive 10 miles down the road and hear a different accent.
Yep.
Even now. My accent is Southern English and influenced by the BBC, really. Yeah. If where I live now in this area, which is Wirral and Liverpool, where people have what's known as a Scouse accent, but even here, if you live on the Wirral, which is the other side of the river from Liverpool, and you accuse people on Wirral of being Scousers, they go bonkers.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because a Scouser is Liverpool. Yeah, and yet lots of Wirral people have, to me, a Scouse accent, right? But to the Liverpudlians and the Wirral people, I have a Southern accent. And one of the things that people from the South say, I don't know why we say it, but we say, well, actually, I don't know why we say that, but we do, yeah? It's part of that ethnic processing, whatever it is. But on a regular basis, somebody will take the juice. They will say to me, well, actually, in that kind of funny, patronising way, which is a way of telling me that I'm not a local.
Yeah.
They're actually saying to me, you're not one of us, you're one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, am I offended by that? I'm not offended by that. But also, I'm not threatened, am I? I'm not physically threatened.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I have a relative amount of status in the community.
Relative, yeah.
So, pretty good. So it's like I'm not easily offended. But if I was a white person in the black community and every day people were being rude, critical, abusive, then over a period of time it would wear me down, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. I think that the simple answer to what you're saying is, what do I own? If you say to me, Sean, I hate you because... Am I thinking, oh dear, that's me, how terrible, how am I going to live with it? Am I thinking, actually, that isn't my stuff, that's your stuff? Mm. And I think that the key to overcoming this stuff is having a clarity of where do I end and where do other people begin? Because if I say something to somebody and I accidentally offend them and they're offended, I can apologise for what I did, but the offence that they feel is their emotion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? If I deliberately go out to offend them, I think that's a different order of events.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lack of sensitivity completely, isn't there?
But essentially, and this is the joke for me, my father comes from a Jewish background, my mother's half Irish, but the other half of her family has both Negro and Chinese in it.
Good for
that. So it's like, doesn't matter, whoever you want to offend, I can be offended. you know what I mean? There's kind of a craziness in it.
Yeah.
On the basis for me that the world is built on the idea that if we all look after each other, then the world is fine. What the hell are we doing fighting?
Does humour have to be at the expense of others? I'm trying to think of a joke or a type of comedy where someone or something isn't getting the mickey taken out of it.
I think that humour comes in different categories. That there are what I would see as physical humours, which are, you know, like... and I can remember these kinds of jokes. One that actually happened, actually, that everybody roared with laughter at, but the guy was quite badly damaged, was that I was working as a labourer on the building site, and there was a chemical toilet, and the painter had cleaned some brushes or something and had poured his terps or whatever it was, spirit oil, down inside this loo. And one of the carpenters had gone in and lit a fag and thrown them. He was actually sat on the loo and thrown the match down the bottom. And effectively, the chemical who kind of blew up his arse and kind of burnt his bum. Although an ambulance was called, I mean, all the guys were just wetting themselves laughing. It was hysterically funny for them. So, I mean, there are kind of physical humours. And if you watch things like You've Been Framed on the telly...
Yeah, people falling over and stuff.
Yeah, we're watching people damage themselves, maybe quite badly, and everyone's roaring with laughter. Isn't this funny? Kind of slapstick madness. Yeah. I think the ones that become the problem, and these are the ones that we're beginning to talk about, are the social humour. And social humour is when you get into this grouping. So in our childhood, the joke in England, the joke would have been, there's an Englishman, an Irishman and a Scotsman. And the punchline always be that the Englishman came out on top. And the Scotsman or the Irishman was seen as being thick.
Yeah.
Yeah, or tight or mean or whatever.
You read a good one before we came out. We'll link to a few. Witty.
But all those things are identifying groups.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, we used to tell those jokes at school all the time, amongst pals. I don't know if the kids still do at school or not, or whether it's too on PC now or what, or they get told off by the parents. But... yeah, I'm just trying to think back. I mean, my group of pals I grew up with, who I'm still pally with, like, nothing was off the table, humour-wise, you know, it was all...
But you used a word earlier on, when we were talking about this, where you used the word banter.
Yeah.
Now, the word banter originally, in my understanding, was a kind of a knockabout humour, playfulness kind of stuff. Banter, for lots of people now, is seen as a negative word.
Yeah.
It describes bad things.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm just laughing about stuff because we still hang out together, me and the guys I went to school with, and we're still the same when we get together. But now, of course, we have our wives and partners with us in tow, and like.
So do you have to moderate your banter?
Well, we can't, and there's sharp intakes of breath every now and again when someone just says that, goes that little bit too far,
and you know, they get all the lads will horrified.
Be, all the boys will be rolling around laughing their heads off, and the girls are super offended and like, yeah. But hey ho.
Yeah.
I can't say what we say. Some of the stuff is just too horrendous. But yeah, I'm sure we've all got examples of that from our friends and family.
One of the things that I suspect, although I think it's easy to say this from the point of view of coming from that white Christian empire background, because we do in England. But in general, I think it's only when. Organisations, religions, whatever the group of people is, develop a level of maturity and confidence about themselves that allows them to be humorous about themselves.
Mm.
And one of the things I was saying to you earlier on, and this is a real joke, and it comes from what would be the Jewish side of my family. So, and they would tell jokes that are self-deprecating.
Yeah.
So the joke would be something like, Izzy goes round to see Manny, and Manny's taking the wallpaper off. So Izzy says, "What are you doing, Manny? Are you decorating?" He says, "Now I'm moving." Because the joke is, Jews are tight, and he's taking the wallpaper with him. Yeah? But that's a Jew telling a Jew a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and they're laughing at themselves.
All my favourite stand-up comics... and comedians from film are Jewish. Thinking about it, my top three would be Woody Allen, Groucho Marx, and Jerry Seinfeld.
Yep.
Jewish guys, you know, something about whether it's what happened during World War II and the Holocaust, that just kind of just forced them to just say, right, we just got to laugh at this, otherwise we're all just going to.
But I think humour is a huge way of surviving.
Yeah, well, that's something. Yeah.
When I work with teams that are in A&E or intensive care or operating teams that deal with the most appalling things and have to deal with the worst end of human experience, and they survive on a kind of a black humour that if you heard it and you weren't a part of it, you'd probably be quite offended by the humour that goes on. And yet for them it's part of their stress function.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit like when I was working on the trains and the issue about people jumping under the trains.
Mm.
And so the humour would be, what do you want for Christmas? Buy me anything, but for God's sake don't buy me a jumper. Yeah. And that kind of stuff has a kind of an intake of breath and a horror, unless you're in it.
Yeah, and you're working in hospitals then, all the time. You must see it amongst nurses and
all the staff. Oh, you're hugely, yeah.
Just to get by, you know, you've got to just take the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably at the expense of patients, quite often, I would have thought.
Not to their faces.
Not to their faces, no.
But it's that whole thing, isn't it? If you're working in a mortuary and you're dealing with dead bodies, your humour is likely to be about death and dead bodies.
It's going to be a bit dark, isn't it?
Yeah, so for other people, that's going to be horrific. But for you, it's part of your stress management. It releases the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm thinking... Also, humour comes from a position of power quite often as well. I mean, Charlie Hebdo, they're holed up in their office in Paris, you know, with... Well, obviously, what's happened is horrendous, but if they were... Would they set up an office, you know, in Pakistan or in some areas of Afghanistan, that kind of thing, and produce those articles? Probably not. And I'm thinking also of... Well... Chris Rock's a great comedian in America, a black comedian, and a lot of his stuff on YouTube, which I'll link to, is you know, what's the problem with white people in that they can't dance, you know, all this. And he tells it to white people and they're all rolling around laughing. If a white guy was taking the mick out of black people, it probably would be very different, you know, it wouldn't get the same kind of laughs. Because it's from a position of power, because white people can sit there laughing their heads off because we rule the world, you know, you can't do anything to us.
And that's what I mean about it's easy to talk about these things from the point of view of being coming from a white Christian empire background. Which, the fact that we are just a little island off the coast of Europe, you know, and British people haven't got their heads around that yet. You know, we're still living like we're an empire.
Yeah.
And I suppose there'll be lots of jokes about that too.
Oh, right. We've done all right, eh?
I think that humour for us all is stress management.
Yeah, well, that's one was summarised was really, why do we laugh? You know, because we have to, don't we?
It lets the pressure out.
Yeah.
And when you laugh, and this is a bit that's important, when you laugh, your brain releases endorphins to make you feel good.
Yeah, and to make someone laugh is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Which is obviously the goal and the aim for the guys that, well, cartoonists all over the world, you know, they want to get a laugh.
But they're also trying to make a point, aren't they?
Yeah.
One of the things I said to you earlier on was when I was a kid, when I was a hippie man, and I go round someone's house and there's this enormous poster on the wall and there's a hippie-looking chap, beard, long hair, creeping up the stairs on this poster and he's carrying an enormous piggy bank and underneath it says Jesus Saves. Right now, I'm sure there are lots of people that would be offended by that. You know, the idea that that would be in some way belittling Jesus. Most people, when they saw it, laughed, and many of those were Christians. And I think that there's a maturity in groups and organisations and religions when they are able to be humorous about what it is they are and who they do and all those things that go with it. You know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that. Humour as a powerful tool is something which is so enlightening and wonderful. I mean, certainly, if I'm doing a conference and I've got 4,000 people, 400 people, whatever, I want them to laugh, because if I get them to laugh, it lifts their defence mechanism, which enables me to get a point in.
Yeah, and you will crack a joke or make that is appropriate for the audience, right?
Yeah. But the tenth thing that I tend to do...
You won't just say, like, repeat some Frankie Boyle joke about...
No. Because, I mean, someone like Frankie Boyle is that kind of social humorist, but he's deliberately offensive.
Yeah, yeah. It's a classic one. He took the mickey out of Jordan's son. I forgot what the guy's name is. I think he has learning difficulties.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that was probably his most offensive joke to date.
Yeah, you know? and people like that who are deliberately offensive, I don't know that is humorous. It's one of those. It's the line, isn't it?
Yeah. Jimmy Carr's a good one as well. He aims for the line just to the point where people will kind of go, but they won't be like walking out of the theatre, you know. So I like that kind of humour. You know, I can take it, but.
But I suppose that one of the things that we learn about ourselves is what do we find funny? Because there are certain things that are hysterical and you're thinking that was absolutely amazing. Someone else is coming out of the same show thing. Well, that was boring. And for me, the bits that really touch me from a funny point of view is observational humour. When people are describing people doing things and they're kind of like people that I know. Yeah, or they may even be describing me. So I end up laughing at myself because I can see me doing what they're talking about. And it's just like the stupidity of normal behaviour.
Yeah.
Which could be very, very funny. Yeah.
Oh, you'd love Jerry Seinfeld then, man. You need to get into some of that stuff. All right. I think we need to sum up really, but I just want to finish with the point that there's obviously a bit of a split, or at least the media would like us to believe, in terms of the Western world and the Islamic world or Christian Muslim world. So I think what we need to do is figure out, because I was looking on YouTube for Muslim or Islamic stand-up comics, and there's plenty on there, a lot of them in Indonesia, interestingly, but I think what we need to do is learn what makes these people laugh and try and, you know,
I think that one of the mistakes we make across the world is that the bits that hit the news, or the bits that become dominant in the way we view the world, are the power blocks, which are the ruling classes. I mean, I'm sure that if the rest of the world looked at maybe David Cameron as our Prime Minister as being typically British, it's typically not.
Oh,
it's probably very un-British if you go and talk to real people.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what it's like. My experience of travelling the world is if you go into a small community in any country, the issues are the same. It's about, we've got kids to bring up, we've got kids to feed, we need to work. Mm-hmm. You know, when kids become adolescents, they're a pain in the backside. I mean, the problems are the same. And very often the humour's the same. I mean, one of the mistakes that Westerners make is when you see a woman from an Islamic country who's dressed in one of those body-covering suits with the slot to look through, you know, whether it's a half or a whole or whatever, is that we can assume a kind of piety. But underneath that, the woman might be wearing the most sexy underwear you could think of.
Okay.
Yeah? It doesn't follow that once she gets into her house with her family and her husband, that the issues are the same. Mm. Yeah. And I think that that's the point. Having travelled around the world, is that people are amazingly similar, that their needs and their drives are very similar.
Yep.
But very often their humour is very similar too, the things that make them laugh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to watch the news list, don't we, man? Because, yeah, it's not helping at all.
Well, we're getting a biased point of view of human consciousness.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm.
Blimey.
All right, interesting stuff. I hope I hope we've offended a few people in the making of this podcast. I'm sure we have.
No, and we want some more wonderful reviews. I love that one-star review. We've never had one of those before.
I think we've had two or three over the year, but we've had quite a couple of hundred reviews in our time, but we've had one or two. One stars.
I'll have to pick those out and have a look.
So yeah, I shouldn't have mentioned. I might cut it, edit it out, actually.
Nah, get it in there. It's real, isn't it?
Have you got a resource of the week, Sean?
I think my resource of the week would be go and listen to Eddie Izzard, who is an observational comic. But the thing I like about Eddie Izzard is he goes out on stage with some ideas, but he doesn't have a script. And he starts to work the audience so that his humour is vital to the moment.
Oh, he's amazing.
Depending on who's in the audience and who's working there.
Smart guy,
I just love the way he works.
All this historical stuff, he's cool.
Lovely.
Yeah, mine's it's like a 45-minute chat called Talking Funny. It's an HBO special. It's just an interview with four comedians.
All right.
Who are Jerry Seinfeld, hence why I found it. Chris Rock, Ricky Gervais, and... Oh, blimey, I forgot his name. Louis C.K. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's funny as well. All these guys have got stand-up stuff on YouTube as well, but it's just four guys talking about what it means to be funny, and they all have different ideas. For example, Chris Rock litters his with swear words. You know, he's not afraid of swearing words. Jerry Seinfeld's never said a swear word on stage in 30 years,
right?
But gets a laugh, so it's cool. I'll look at it and see what you think.
And some people will be offended by the swear words and some people won't.
Exactly, yes. So they probably know a lot more about it than we do.
Yeah.
Next week we're going to talk about choices, decisions, and the fear of failure. That's I think Nikki emailed in about that, so we'll discuss that one.
Okay, I'm on.
And we had a lot of good suggestions recently. Actually, I've got some ammunition, but if you want to email us in with some ideas and potential topics, please do, because we will. Yeah. We always squeeze them in, don't we, Sean?
Yep, you sure do.
All right, all done.
Okay, I'm happy.
Have a good week.
I will. You do too.
Laugh lots. All righty.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.